You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated...
It is Monday, October 17th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Academy-nominated actor, more importantly, activist Mark Ruffalo, heavily active in the fracking issue in New York State, and now getting very involved in Occupy Wall Street. We will be talking to him. We'll also be talking to Greg Basta. He is part of the team that created OccupyTheBoardroom.org as Occupy Wall Street begins to take some of its direct action online. We will be talking to him later in the program, and hopefully our guy Jeff Smith will be calling into the program in the better half of the show. Quite a weekend down in, not just Wall Street, but in across the world. As sort of like, it's almost like a rebound effect with Occupy Wall Street. You know, Occupy Wall Street, very heavily influenced and at least advised by people who have come from the equivalent overseas. In other words, Los Indignados in Spain, the privatization protests in Israel, the protests in Greece, the UK Uncut folks. Have been advising and were part of the Occupy Wall Street from the beginning. And then that moniker was adopted across the world. Protests literally across the world. We'll get into it as the show continues. Over the weekend, I was on the Chris Hayes program. I guess it was just yesterday now. I'm exhausted. I'm happy to be back, but I'm exhausted. And we will post the video from Up with Chris Hayes on our site at majority.fm. It was a fantastic – I mean, anybody who's listened to the show for an extended period of time knows that I have arguably a man crush on Chris Hayes. And his show is so good now that it's – that I resent it. It's so good. It's like that classic – you know, I used to feel this as a comedian. I'd watch something as a comedian that I wish I had made. And then the default response is resent. Why is that person that much funnier or just has that much better of a show? Now, fortunately, it's just on the weekend, so it doesn't really compete with this program whatsoever. But definitely check it out. We talked about what's happening with Occupy Wall Street in the context of Martin Luther King's legacy. Yesterday, they dedicated his memorial on the Mall. And just a fascinating conversation. And be able to sit next to Bob Herbert, who I'm a fan of, definitely worth checking out. I will tell you now, folks, a little house cleaning before we go to Mark Ruffalo. You can support this show by becoming a member at majoritireport.fm or majority.fm. This show only exists because of listener support. only. We have one sponsor that is just coffee.coop, and it accounts for about 0.2% of the revenue for this show. You make it possible for me to go on programs like Chris Hayes' show and talk about OccupyTheBoardroom.org or Occupy Wall Street. You make it possible for me to go on to mainstream media and argue for this. And you also make it possible for me to go down and broadcast from there. We have a lot of new listeners over the past couple of weeks. I ask, continue to sample the show. And if you can afford to support it, please do. If you can't, email me and we'll work something out. People are going through tough times right now, and we lose members, you know, a couple times a week because, frankly, the bottom falls out of their income. And I don't want to deny anybody full access to the program, but if you can afford it, you will keep this show alive, and only you. Other things you can do is go to podcastawards.com. We've been nominated for People's Choice and Best News in Politics. You can vote every day. It is free. You have no reason not to. And, of course, you can give us a recommendation on iTunes and donate your Facebook and your Twitter accounts at donateyouraccount.com/majority. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Mark Ruffalo.
To let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine, the next is black. So if you want me off your back, well, come on and let me know.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Pleasure to welcome to the program Academy Award nominated actor Mark Ruffalo. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
So, and I should also say, I guess, Countdown contributor as well.
That's right. That's one of my many titles now.
Well, now, and let's talk about this. I know you've been getting more and more involved in Occupy Wall Street. I know I was following your fracking stuff. We both are residents of Hudson Valley. I think you're in the Delaware County or Greene County, one of those up there. But let's first talk about Occupy Wall Street. You've been checking it. You've been more or less checking this out since the beginning, haven't you?
I probably went down there the first time about, I'd say 3 weeks ago. By the way, happy birthday, Occupy Wall Street. It's their it's the celebration of their first month.
Oh, that's right. It's the 17th today.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I started to clock it on social media a little bit and, decided that I wanted to go down and see what it was about. It, you know, from what I read, their messaging seemed to be something that I thought could resonate. And it wasn't being run by any one group or political movement or anything. It really did seem like the cousin to what we see happening in the Middle East at the Arab Spring, and that was exciting to me. And so I decided I'd go down there and see it for myself.
Just give me a sense of your first reactions, and if your sense of what's happening down there has changed over the past 30 days.
Yeah. You know what I have been part of protests in the past, mostly for the protests in the Iraq War, but also stuff with hydrofracking. And the first thing that I noticed was there was a although there was a lot of indignation there was a real lack of rage, And there was a real sweet kind of gentle discourse going on between the people, and that was very different than a lot of the protests that I've been to in the past. And there was a lot of exchanging of ideas and a lot of openness in the people that were involved, and people from disparate political beliefs, walks of life, cultures, and class. And I found that to be really remarkable. There was just a very open and kind spirit to what I experienced there. And one thing that was common in all of those people was this commitment, which I found very moving. You know, people make fun of them, especially the younger people. But you know, to sit out there day in and day out in the rain, without tents, not being allowed to have any kind of amenities that even a backpacker would enjoy. That's an enormous commitment and I think it's really, I think it's sad that America tends to attach themselves to these superficial things, like these hippies, or look at them, they're dirty, they're, you know, sleeping outside. I mean, I noticed an incredible commitment to their beliefs. And it's just something that you don't see very often. And so I was very moved by it.
You know, you and I mean, let's talk about this a little bit, because you and I think, are more or less the same age. And there was, you know, we grew up in that time where, you know, or I guess maybe we came into our sort of political consciousness around a time where Reagan was ascendant. And mm-hmm. there was a real sort of like a P.J. O'Rourke, if that makes any sense, mentality of that's really when the hippie punching started, was during that era, that notion of like, in the wake of Alex P. Keaton. And on some levels, I mean, this is the first time I've seen anything like this, where there has been, where it has been able to sort of pierce through that sort of detached, irony, apathy, almost hipper than thou attitude that I think, you know, sort of the slacker generation had in some respects. I mean, do you get that same sense?
Yeah. The other thing that I think is what we've fallen into is also this other, you know, the other. It's something that's used a lot in our political discourse, and it's used to demonize particular groups and points of view, to take away their humanity. And when you could take away their humanity by calling them names, or casting aspersions about them, or debasing them, then you actually can take away their messaging. And it's something that I think we've seen a lot of in the past, since that time. It's something that I think, you know, certain cynical parties in politics have used to divide us as a people in this nation, and basically get one over on us, because we're so engaged in this backbiting and dehumanizing of each other, that our common needs and our common interests have been lost.
And I want to talk a little bit about your becoming politically active in the context of being an actor and a guy with a considerable amount of acclaim. I mean, actors have just as much, reason to be involved in anything as anybody else, for that matter. But it does make a difference. I mean, you know, early on, I think it was September 20th or 21st, the NPR ombudsman was responding to why, maybe it was even later than that, why they weren't covering it. And one of the things they said, point blank, was that there was no one there who was of any import. And which is obviously a good indication of where
disgusting.
It's disgusting. And but what it does also is it raises the question of the importance of someone like yourself getting involved. I mean, it wasn't until Michael Moore and Susan Sarandon and yourself started going down there that it gave license, sadly, but that's the fact, to the mainstream media, the corporate media, to get involved. And I want to just ask you about, you know,
and Russell Simmons, by the way.
Exactly. And Cornel West was down there around that time.
The
importance that you personally feel about getting involved. I mean, because obviously you've gotten involved in fracking. You were more aware of the issue probably because it was happening in your area. But it's like you say, you were involved in the Iraq War protests. But tell me about the sort of the implications and the responsibility you feel to get that drives you to get involved in these things.
Well, you know, it's the sad truth is that as an actor, you in America today, your voice happens to travel a little bit further than some other people's, than most people's. And you know, I was brought up, you know, my teacher came out of the group theater and the group theater was in part responsible for the strike movement in the '30s, which turned into, you know, a lot of what we see today as far as our social, well-being, you know, and so I was taught that as an actor, as an artist, you had a responsibility. And you had a responsibility to the common good. And, you know, when you're making your bones as a young actor, you barely have enough, you know, water to boil kasha. You know, I didn't have the time and I didn't have the wherewithal to be as involved as I wanted to be. I was struggling just like everybody else. But you know, now I've gotten to a place where my career is underway and I have some extra time on my hands and extra resources, and I feel compelled to give back to the very people who have made my life wonderful and great, and who don't have a voice. And so with hydrofracking, you know, I went and visited these people and seen how debased their lives have become. I mean, they can't use the water that comes out of their tap. I mean, I don't know many modern countries where something like that is happening. And they didn't have a voice, and the entire political system had turned their back on them, and I see the same thing with the Occupy Wall Street movement. Now, I was very reticent to jump into it because I think one of the great power of this movement is that it is a people's movement. No one's been able to co-opt it. And I certainly didn't want to have to appear to be doing that or have any interest in that, but as I was there and I saw that the media wasn't covering it, I started to step into it to push it out there as much as I could without stepping on its intent and what it's about.
Well, I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, I have a great admiration for you doing that. I mean, I spent a couple of years working with Janine on Air America, Janine Garofalo, and she was one of the few people who are allowed to go on television and argue that we should not be invading Iraq. Just the other day we were down at Occupy Wall Street with Naomi Klein, and she was, you know, put out a plea for people with some measure of celebrity, use that celebrity. And, you know, when I see actors who and artists who have that type of acclaim and they are using it that way and expending it that way, I find it very impressive. But tell me, I mean, now, there is a sense out there that it can cost you in terms of your career. There's another sense that it could actually, in some respects, has absolutely no implications whatsoever. I mean, how are the people that you're dealing with in the context of the industry, are they reacting at all? Are you getting any pushback? Are you at that place in your career where, you know, your agent's just like, just as long as you keep doing films, I don't care what else you do?
I've had actually no pushback from my industry. I've actually have had a lot of, I feel like, support. You know, I don't know. You know, there is that inkling of fear, you know.
Right.
is you know, and but then I weigh that against you know, the kind of human being that I say that I am. And if I am who I say that I am, then I have to step out and stand behind my convictions. And honestly, you know, my business is a popular business. It's a business that's mostly for people, and it's dictated by people. And if people like you, then they go to see your movies. And if they go to see your movies, then producers say, oh, well, he's good. He draws an audience. Let's give him another job. And so, you know, in a strange way, I feel, you know, I, buddy, when I was a young actor, I was so poor. And I had nothing, man. I could barely, you know, there was weeks where I had a, you know, a loaf of bread and some peanut butter and jelly and a bag of apples, and that was it. But I was pretty happy, and I lived in the poorest part of Los Angeles. I lived with the immigrants there. They had nothing as well. And we had a pretty true, beautiful life. And the theater is very cheap to do, and I can always go back to that. You know, I'd rather feel like at the end of the day, you know, I used whatever I had been given, my gifts and my good fortune, to give back a little bit to the very people who put me there. And if that's going to cost me, then you know what, man? Money isn't everything, and careers aren't everything. I got a great family. I have a beautiful life. I have a beautiful wife. I have great friends who I know wouldn't turn their backs on me. And you know, you got to let the chips fall as they may.
Well, Mark, I really appreciate the work you're doing, and I think it's frankly inspirational to everybody. I mean, you know, this is what it's going to take to grow the movement, is where people decide they want to be the people that they think they are.
I agree. And you know what? It's growing. I mean, you know, part of the beauty of the movement is it's actually done pretty damn well with you know, a B-list celebrity like myself and some other help. You know, it really is owned by the people. And I'm very moved and interested to see where this is all going to end up. It's taken the world by storm, and I'm glad to have been a part of it from the beginning.
Mark Ruffalo, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. All
right, folks, we got to take a break. When we come back, I will do some talking. Oh, you know what? We should probably check in on another celebrity of sorts. She was checking out Occupy Wall Street. This one's going to be a little more disturbing, but the caliber of performance art, pretty impressive. We will talk about that, and then we'll be talking to Greg Basta, one of the organizers of OccupyTheBoardroom.org. We'll be right back after this. All right, folks, we're back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. I want to thank listener Kevin Cruz for sending me this clip. I'm not going to play the whole clip. It's 15 minutes long. I cannot implore you more to watch something. But here it is. Here is Victoria Jackson coming to Wall Street. I'm just going to play the first minute and a half. It's just too funny. It's just too funny. She's just too insane. If you watch the whole clip, the amazing thing is that this is one of the most ineffective hit jobs I've ever seen. There's an argument out there that she's really Andy Kaufman, and I think it's a legitimate argument. But listen to her as she, the first part is she's driving in a cab from the airport So she's looking out at the skyline. There's a musical break, and then she's talking to the cab driver. You just got to hear this. Here it is.
I am here in New York City. That's the skyline, minus the Twin Towers, which were right about there. That some Muslims crashed into. I'm here because I'm going to Wall Street. I want to ask the protesters what they're protesting. I think they are against capitalism, and I think capitalism is a great thing. That's how our country got to be so the best in the world. And that's, I'm curious, so that I'm going to ask them why they're there and why they're mad. So here we go.
This is the nice graphics there. Vicky goes to Washington.
Do you know about Jesus Christ? Can I give you this?
God's Way to Salvation pamphlet.
I'm going to give it to the people on Wall Street.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that's the solution to everyone's problem.
Hello.
A pamphlet. There you go, folks. Says Vicky goes to Washington. She's in New York. That's all right. That's the branding of the show. And then the solution to most of this is a pamphlet from God, a God pamphlet. We'll post the rest of that video on the site. It's too fantastic. Let me quickly just give you an update on what is happening in terms of Occupy Wall Street in terms of our politics. Right now, President Obama is going on a bus tour. I mean, it's so bizarre to me. The disparate tracks that are being taken. You have Occupy Wall Street has been going on. It has been growing exponentially. People are aware, of course, over the course of the week, just how big this has gotten. You had Saturday night in New York, at least 10,000 people who marched up to Times Square. There was some confrontations. We'll play some audio for you in the better half of the show. There were 900 cities in Europe, Africa, Asia, North America took part in this worldwide demonstration. Washington, Toronto, Denver, Chicago. Chicago, 175 people were arrested yesterday morning. New Zealand, in London, you had arrests in at least four cities across this country, including New York. There was about 71 people arrested, 24 of whom were arrested when they went into a Citibank. And it's unclear to me how many of them were depositors. At least one woman was. She wanted to close her account. The Citibank people locked them in the Citibank. One woman, who was the depositor, got out. She was outside waiting for her friends. The cops show up. Not only do they arrest the people inside the bank for trespassing and for, according to Citibank, because they would not leave, which is very difficult to do when you're locked inside. But they took this woman who had closed her account. And we'll try and maybe play some of this audio. It's a little bit tricky to pull because you can't really tell what's going on. But she's standing outside the bank. She is fingered by one of the bank security people as having been inside the bank and having closed her account. The cops come up to her and they say, "Were you inside the bank?" She says, "Yes, I was. I'm a depositor. I closed my account." She shows them their checkbook. They grab her and drag her back into the bank to arrest her. And Citibank comes out with a release saying these people would not leave the bank. She was gone. She was outside the bank even after they had locked in the rest of the protesters. Yet they instructed the police department. And I don't know where the police department gets off on this. I mean, look, you can see cops. Bank of America tried to do the same thing a week ago out in Santa Cruz. And the cops were just like, you know, We're not going to arrest these people. They're not trespassing. You can't arrest somebody for not leaving after they've left. But apparently in New York City, when it comes to Citibank, they're the boss. We will put that video on our on majority.fm as well. If you measure it, and it, of course it's not the greatest measure, and I don't know if it's a one-to-one relationship, but in terms of rate, Meetup.com, Occupy Together, where Occupy Together folks have shifted their efforts, the number of communities represented has doubled in the past last 8 days, from 945 to over 1,700 across the country. That's according to Tech Presidents. Occupy Wall Street has raised over $300,000. They are now storing stuff in a donated in their donated supplies in Lower Manhattan at a United Federation of Teachers office, which has donated their location for storage. Supporters are shipping about 300 boxes a day. The movement has opened their account at the Amalgamated Bank, which is the only 100% union-owned bank in the United States. If you're looking for a full-service bank to move your stuff to, Amalgamated is a great choice if you don't have a local credit union. So the movement is growing. And the question is whether or not it can continue to capture the attention and the interest outside of the movement. And certainly, the Obama campaign thinks so. Washington Post reports that President Obama and his team have decided to turn public anger at Wall Street into a central tenet of the reelection strategy. Not surprising, not a bad thing. As long as the movement itself does not allow it to be co-opted into simply an electoral strategy. It should be something that is used as leverage by our politicians. This is a good thing from the perspective of wanting some type of political change. But the movement cannot be co-opted, should not be co-opted, and should not see this as any sign of their job as being over. It is simply one element, one which I think it's clear at this point is of negligible benefit in the short run anyways. 12 months from now, as people make the decision about who to go to vote for, the gut check is going to be about who would make the decision more about helping my life than Wall Street. That's David Plouffe, Barack Obama's campaign manager. Obama is, in fact, raising less money than Mitt Romney. Less money than he did in 2008 from Wall Street and less money from Mitt Romney. So he may see there's some benefit to this. Do I think this is going to impact the way that he that he would govern if he becomes president? No. But at the same time, I do think this movement will grow bigger, believe it or not, after under a President Obama in his second term than it would under a President Romney. And the reason is, I have been there before, folks. You can all get under one banner against the Republican in office, but that doesn't mean that you're fighting for real, legitimate, progressive, or leftist change. And I actually think it would be healthier for the movement to be able to grow under a Democratic administration. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Greg Basta from OccupyTheBoardroom.org. And we'll talk more about that theme, the implications of Occupy Wall Street, and electoral politics in the better half of the show. We'll be back in just a minute. We are back on the phone. Greg Basta, he's the deputy director of the New York Communities for Change. Greg, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Tell me briefly a little something about New York Communities for Change.
So New York Communities for Change is a community-based organization, a membership-based organization. We're an organization of low and moderate income families throughout New York State fighting for economic changes, fighting to prevent foreclosures, fighting for more affordable housing, and to stop education cuts.
Were you guys involved in that action to shut down that foreclosure auction the other day? I think it was in Brooklyn, or I'm not sure exactly where it was.
Yeah, we had some of our folks there. We've been working on actions like that for the past 6 months. We have tons of members that are facing foreclosure and facing eviction. Over the last couple of years, we've worked at a couple of shutdowns, and we were there last week as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are actions that people haven't been aware of that have been happening sort of like slightly under the radar, but they have been simmering under the surface. How did you get involved in Occupy Wall Street?
So, I think I'll admit myself, like a bunch of other community activists working for, organizations in New York City, we didn't know what to make of it at first. We didn't know how it was going to evolve. And it was really just impressive to watch the activists down at Zuccotti Park to really start building a movement and start changing the narrative in this country.
And there was some frustration too, wasn't there? I think there was a lot. I sensed some measure of frustration of like, wow, we've been doing this. We've been involved in these actions, direct actions. We just haven't had any of this type of attention.
Sure. There was definitely a little frustration. And I think what was great is a lot of the organizations in New York, like NYCC and Align, realized, well, why be frustrated? This is something where we can work together, make it grow exponentially by putting all of our organizing efforts, getting, our members. I know a lot of people were criticizing. They thought there was a lack of diversity down there. Well, our members wanted to get involved. The vast majority of our members are African-American and Latino residents of New York City and New York State. So this is great. We can band together and actually build this.
And you guys got together and created Occupy the Boardroom. Who are part of this team that are creating this, and what is it?
So let me just say, it was amazing how quickly this came about. It was sort of brainstorming between myself, our communications director Olivia Lehrer, and Austin Guest from Align New York, which is the New York chapter of Jobs with Justice. We started talking about, we knew this big bank day of action was coming this past Saturday. And in our social media streams, there were so many people that, were saying, we'd love to be down there. We're not nearby. What can we do online? What can we do to, actually help support this? And so we just talked about, well, maybe there's a way we can get messages sent directly to the top bankers, the top 1%, the bank executives. So we actually went down and talked to some folks at Zuccotti Park, and were able to recruit a team of just volunteer developers and designers who, over the past 10 days, have been working practically 24 hours a day to get up a system where we can, provide a form for people to email bankers directly, tell their stories, and just get the word out so we can get it directly to them. And, we launched on Saturday. We're approaching 4,000 emails to the bankers from over 147 different countries.
Wow. And, on some level, the thing that interests me about this is that you're taking a movement that sort of at least initiated and somewhat organized, and at least a call was made via online. It has established itself offline significantly, and now some of that direct action is available to people who can't get down there, and you're doing it online again.
Yep, absolutely. It's really funny how they've worked in harmony. What's going to be really exciting with this is, not only are we going to be delivering these emails to the bank executives via email, but we had dozens of organizations throughout the country, tell their constituents, email out to their constituents about this action. So, people in these organizations in everywhere from California to Idaho to Montana to Nevada that want to start taking some more action. We're going to be working with them to get the emails out so they can do some pretty interesting ways of delivering to bank executives in their area as well.
All right, great. Well, the website is occupytheboardroom.org. Occupytheboardroom.org. If you want to send a message, it's basically what bank executives are getting these messages?
You name them, we got them. We actually are going to be contacting over 100 bank executives and board members from all the big guns, J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Citi, Wells Fargo, Bank of America. You can take your pick. You can send to all of them. You can pick your own pen pal and get your message and your story heard.
Great. I hope it freaks them out a little bit.
So do we.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Greg Basta from New York Communities for Change.
Thanks again.
All right, folks. We are now going to head into the better half of the program. Again, you can support the show by becoming a member at majority.fm. You can buy your craft that you buy on Amazon. Buy it through our link. Go to our link on majority.fm, bookmark it, buy your craft through there. We get a little bit of a kickback. And also, very important, help spread the word, podcastawards.com. You can go and vote for us for People's Choice and Best News Politics podcast. You can vote once a day, which means that everybody who's voting, who we're competing against, they're voting once a day. No excuse. Link it. Remind yourself. Set up one of those alerts on your iPhone. When we come back, I will take your phone calls. If you are at an Occupy protest, if you have been over the weekend, call in. Tell me your experiences. Maybe we'll hear from Jeff, who was pulling like literally 22 hours, I think, awake over the weekend. Things were getting pretty heated here in New York. I'll take your IMs at Majority FM. We'll be back in just a minute.